Louis was panting a little from having descended 10 flights of stairs. He found himself fascinated by the dining table. Its top seemed sculpted, but the contours were shaped and placed to suggest soup plates, salad or butter or dinner plates, or coasters for the bottom of a mug. Decades or centuries of use had stained the hard white material. "You wouldn't use plates," Louis speculated. "You'd dish the food into the depressions and hose the table off afterward." It seemed unsanitary, but... "They wouldn't bring flies or mosquitoes or wolves. Why should they bring bacteria?" "Colonic bacteria," he answered himself, "for digestion. And if one bacteria mutated, turning vicious..." By then there would be no immunity to anything. Was that how the Ringworld civilization had died? Any civilization requires a minimum number to maintain it. Teela and Speaker were paying him no attention. They knelt in the bend of the window, looking down. Louis went to join them. "They're still at it," said Teela. And they were. Louis guessed that 1,000 people were looking up at him. They were not chanting now. "They can't know we're here," he said. Speaker suggested, "Perhaps they worship the building." "Even so, they can't do this every day. We're too far from the edge of town. They couldn't reach the fields." "Perhaps we happen by on a special day, the holy day." Teela said, "Maybe something happened last night, something special, like us. Or if someone spotted us after all. Or like that." She pointed.
"I wondered about that," said Speaker. "How long has it been falling?"
"Since I woke up, at least. It's like a rain or a new kind of snow. Wire from the shadow squares, mile after mile of it. Why do you suppose it fell here?" Louis thought of 6 million miles of distance between each shadow square, of an entire 6 million mile strand torn loose by its impact with the lyre, falling with the lyre toward the Ringworld landscape on nearly the same course. It was hardly surprising that they had come across part of that enormous strand. He was not in a long-winded mood. "Coincidence," he said. "Anyway, it's draped all over us, and it's been falling since last night, probably. The natives must have worshipped the castle already because it floats."
"Consider," the Kazin said slowly. "If Ringworld engineers were to appear today, floating down from this floating castle, it would be taken as more appropriate than surprising. Louis, shall we try the god gambit?"
Louis turned to answer, and couldn't. He could only try to keep a straight face. He might have made it, but Speaker was explaining to Teela.
"It was Louis' suggestion that we might succeed better with the natives by posing as Ringworld engineers. You and Louis were to be acolytes. Nessus was to be a captive demon, but we can hope to do without him. I was to be more god than engineer, a kind of war god."
Then Teela started to laugh, and Louis broke up. 8 feet tall, inhumanly broad across the shoulders and hips, the Kazin was too big and too toothy to be other than fearsome, even when burnt bald. His rat-like tail had always been his least impressive feature. Now his skin was the same color, baby pink, crisscrossed with lavender capillaries. Without the fur to bulk out his head, his ears became ungainly pink parasols. Orange fur made a domino mask across his eyes, and he seemed to have grown his own fluffy orange pillow to sit on. The danger of laughing at a Kazin only made it funnier. Doubled over, with his arms around his middle, laughing silently now because he could not inhale, Louis backed toward what he hoped was a chair. An inhumanly large hand closed on his shoulder and lifted him high. Still convulsed with mirth, Louis faced the Kazin at eye level. He heard,
"Truly, Louis, you must explain this behavior."
Louis made an enormous effort.
"A kind of war god," he said, and was off again.
Teela was making hiccuping sounds. The Kazin let him down and waited for the fit to pass.
"You simply aren't impressive enough to play god," Louis said some minutes later.
"Not until the hair grows back."
"But if I tore some humans to pieces with my hands, perhaps they would respect me then."
"They'd respect you from a distance and from hiding. That wouldn't do us any good." No, we'll just have to wait for the hare. Even then, we ought to have Nessus's task.
The puppeteer is unavailable.
But
I say he is unavailable. How shall we contact the natives?
You'll have to stay here. See what you can learn from the map room.
Teela and I, said Louis, and suddenly remembered.
Teela, you haven't seen the map room.
What's it like?
You stay here and get Speaker to show you. I'll go down alone. You two can monitor me by communicator disk, and come for me if there's trouble. Speaker, I want your flashlight laser.
The Kazin grumbled, but he did relinquish the flashlight laser. It still left him with the modified slaver disintegrator.
From 1,000 feet over their heads, he heard their reverent silence become a murmur of astonishment. And he knew that they had seen him, a bright speck separating from the castle window. He sank toward them. The murmur did not die. It was suppressed. He could hear the difference. Then the singing began.
It drags, Teela had said, and they don't keep in step, and it all sounds flat.
Louis's imagination had gone on from there. As a result, the singing took him by surprise. It was much better than he had expected. He guessed they were singing a 12-tone scale. The octave scale of most of the human worlds was also a 12-tone scale, but with differences. Small wonder it had sounded flat to Teela. Yes, it dragged. It was church music, slow and solemn and repetitive, without harmony, but it had grandeur. The square was immense. 1,000 people were a vast throng after weeks of loneliness, but the square could have held 10 times that number. Loudspeakers could have kept them singing in step, but there were no loudspeakers. A lone man waved his arms from a pedestal in the center of the square, but they would not look at him. They were all looking up at Louis Wu. For all that, the music was beautiful. Teela could not hear that beauty. The music of her experience had come from recordings and tri-D sets, always by way of a microphone system. Such music could be amplified, rectified, the voices multiplied or augmented, the bad takes thrown away. Teela Brown had never heard live music. Louis Wu had. He slowed his cycle to give his nerve ends time to adapt to the rhythms of it. He remembered the great public sings on the cliffs above Crash Landing City, throngs which had boasted twice this number, sings which had sounded different for that and another reason. For Louis Wu had been singing too. Now, as he let the music vibrate in him, his ears began to adjust to the slightly sharp or flat notes, to the blurring of voices, to the repetition, to the slow majesty of the hymn. He caught himself as he was about to join in the singing. That's not a good idea, he thought, and let his cycle settle toward the square. The pedestal in the center of the square had once held a statue. Louis identified the human-like footprints, each 4 feet long, that marked where the statue had stood. Now the pedestal housed a kind of triangular altar, and a man stood with his back to the altar waving his arms as the people sang. Flash of pink above gray robe. Louis assumed that the man was wearing a headpiece, perhaps of pink silk. He chose to land on the pedestal itself. He was just touching down when the conductor turned to face him. As a result, he almost wrecked the cycle. It was pink scalp Louis had seen. Unique in this crowd of heads like golden flowers, faces of blonde hair with eyes peeping through, this man's face was as naked as Louis Wu's own. With a straight-armed gesture, palms down, the man held the last note of the singing, held it for seconds, then cut it. A fragment of a second later, the tail of it drifted in from the edges of the square. The priest faced Louis Wu in a sudden silence. He was as tall as Louis Wu, tall for a native. The skin of his face and scalp were so pale as to be nearly translucent, like a we-made-it albino. He must have shaved many hours ago with a razor that was not sharp enough, and now the stubble was emerging, adding its touch of gray everywhere but for the 2 circles around his eyes. He spoke with a note of reproof, or so it seemed. The translator disc instantly said, "So you have come at last." "We didn't know we were expected," Louis said truthfully. He was not confident enough to try a god gambit based on himself. In a long lifetime, he had learned that telling a consistent set of lies could get hellishly complicated.
You grow hair on your head, said the priest. One presumes that your blood is less than pure, O engineer,